Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106 if you want to respond to anything you're hearing on the program this morning. Still come on the program from the Eastern Shore Republican Women's Club. We got Judy Barlow warming up in the bullpen. Also, from WVNN in Huntsville, Alabama, our Monday visit with Dale Jackson, always delightful, I am sure. But joining us now on the line, soon to be your next state auditor, but still officially state representative for Muscle Shoals, Andrew Sorrell on the line with us. Andrew, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jeff, I'm doing well. And, you know, it's funny, there's going to actually be about a six-week period where I'm not an elected official at all. From when my term as a state representative ends on, I think it's November 8th, until I get sworn in January 15th or 16th, I'll technically not be an elected official for that little window of time.
But you'll be a state auditor-elect, so I guess that's kind of quasi elected official, but
yeah, I don't think I'll get much of a break either way.
But well, and people don't know this, that unlike a lot of these offices, especially the constitutional offices statewide, not till you're sworn in on inauguration day you don't become that official. But in the legislature, you pick up right where you left off, right? That when you win the election, then that next day, or what's whatever the election's certified, I suppose, then whoever wins that is the member of the legislature.
Yeah, you take office at midnight. Now, your voting privileges don't begin until you are sworn in, which for me was 2 days later. But, yeah, you do gain the title just 5 hours after the polls close if you win the election. That's a very quick turnaround.
Yeah, because, the governor could call a special session or something of that sort, and then you would be called upon to go through Montgomery. It was like your colleague Parker Moore, right? He had to go through all those elections and never really served in the legislature or cast a vote in it, but he was a legislator, and then he had to go through the general election again. So it doesn't matter until, I guess, you go down to vote, but you do get the notoriety of being a member of the legislature for the time being.
Well, that's right. And your duties do begin immediately. You have people contacting you immediately. And the same thing, I believe, happened to Rex Reynolds. You know, he won a special election, but he was only there for maybe a week or less serving in the legislature before that session ended, and then he had to redo the entire election and wait for the next year as well. But, you know, we've cleaned a little bit of that up. Now, if there is a vacancy that occurs past October 1st of the year preceding an election, there is no special election, because the legislature figured out it costs a lot of money to hold these special elections, and what's the point if the person's never going to actually get to cast a vote during that next regular session anyway? Then why not just delay and just have one election instead of two? So we passed that bill either my first or second year in the legislature.
Representative, let's talk about this. And I know since you're about to depart the legislature, a lot of people, myself included, you kind of wonder who's going to be who's going to be the new guard of sort of the, unofficial, like, Freedom Caucus of the legislature. You're going to be out. Another gentleman I think is kind of lines up, Tommy Haynes from the northeast corner of the state. A lot of turnover there. What do you think? What is the legislature going to be like? Who is going to be kind of that bulwark to at least be there to cast a no vote, to be on the record when necessary?
Yeah, we're losing another good one. That's Representative Mike Holmes out of Wetumpka. He was always the top five most conservative in the House. So, yeah, we're losing, I'd say, three of our top five most conservative state House members, in order of who's ranked on the scorecards, are not going to be returning. I think to answer your question, I think Arnold Mooney is a strong conservative. He's still in there. Jamie Keel is emerging as a real strong conservative leader from, we share a portion of Colbert County up here in North Alabama. He lives in Russellville and Franklin County. I think that there are two new people that got elected to the legislature that I'm really excited about. I think they're going to be strong fighters for freedom and liberty. That would be future Representative Ben Harrison from House District 2, replacing Lynn Greer. And that would be future Representative Ernie Yarbrough, who's replacing Chauncey Robertson in House District 7. So I would keep an eye on those two names, Ben Harrison and Ernie Yarbrough. I expect they will quickly rise to the top of all the voting scorecards in Alabama. I think they're definitely going to be top five.
Do you think it's going to be much? I mean, I could tell, I could feel it, I could see it, your frustration this quadrennium. Maybe it didn't turn out maybe the way you had hoped, but just with under the leadership that you had, maybe it changes when we get a new speaker and maybe things aren't at, I mean, the Alabama legislature is always kind of a puzzle, right? But maybe it won't be as so set in its ways with new leadership.
You know, it was puzzling to me. We had some big successes. I would say getting constitutional carry done. You know, me and Shane Stringer worked very, very closely on that. Getting civil asset forfeiture reform done. I worked closely on that with Senator Arthur Orr. There was a bill that passed this year that prohibited taxpayer resources from being spent on a ballot referendum. That was huge. It's been a corrupt practice in Alabama that was perfectly legal for many years, where basically every time there was a vote yes campaign on a tax, the school system and local school board could spend unlimited public funds promoting a vote yes campaign, while the vote no campaign had to go out and open a PAC and raise private money to oppose it. So we've leveled the playing field there. So we accomplished some really good things in the 4 year. And of course, I shouldn't leave out the fact that we passed the strongest pro-life bill in the nation my first year in the legislature in 2019. But there were a lot of frustrations on things that were left undone. Like, for instance, I don't feel like the Republicans did too much to check the growth of government. The Republicans were the ones passing the budgets, which were continually increasing in size. And I was fair about it. I voted for some of the budgets. I voted against some of the budgets. You know, the budgets that I felt like were growing government by 16% a year. Well, 16% growth in a budget is too much in a single year. We're growing government too fast. And I hope that this next quadrennium, that would be my number one goal for the next quadrennium, is hoping that the legislature will slow down the growth of government. Let's pay some debt off. Let's lower people's taxes. And let's stop growing government as fast as we have been.
Well, your experience there in Montgomery, another weird quirk about the town is just how much power the bureaucracy has over the legislative process. So whatever, one of these members comes on this show or any other show and they start talking about tax relief or tax cuts, it's incredible to me to watch people within government, and it's the pseudo Alabama's version of the deep state or the administrative state, really get aggressive and say, no, we don't need to roll back the grocery tax. The school kids will suffer, or whatever it may be. We don't need to do this with transportation dollars. Our roads and bridges will suffer. And we have Young Boozer, the state treasurer, was on, and they got like 10-something billion dollars in the treasury. We got another tranche of ARPA money the legislature's got to dole out, but they never say, let's look around and see what these other states are doing. Let's get some tax relief. It's always remarkable that in a Republican supermajority that's not really something, or is that something that gets widespread support just because way state government is.
No, you're exactly right. The legislature acts like if we repeal the grocery tax that we won't have any money for education, yet look at all the states around us that don't have the grocery tax, and their education is far better than Alabama's. I mean, we're ranked at the absolute bottom of the barrel, so there obviously is a way to not tax people on their groceries and still have adequate funding for education. And the dirty little secret in Montgomery that I never hear anybody other than me talk about this, but we spend 50% more on education now than we did 10 years ago. And our education rankings have actually fallen in the last 10 years. So we're always willing to spend more money, but we're not willing to do the things that would actually fix education in Alabama. Like, for instance, we failed to pass the critical race theory bill this year. The House got it through. The Senate killed it upstairs. That's completely unacceptable. We still have not repealed Common Core in Alabama. We've played around and pretended like we're going to and pretended like we have, but we still have, in essence, Common Core in Alabama. We do not have school choice in Alabama. That's something that's been wildly successful in other states like Florida. But watch how fast they've climbed the education rankings nationwide after implementing school choice. And by the way, none of the three things that I named that would actually fix education in Alabama would cost us anything, except possibly we'd have to purchase new textbooks if we repealed the Common Core standards. Other than that, everything I just named would be completely free to try, and it would probably actually work. And yet we're unwilling to do that, and we just funnel more and more money into education bureaucracy. A lot of it doesn't ever filter down to the local level. It doesn't get in the classroom, and it doesn't actually help students get better ACT scores and get a higher graduation rate. It just doesn't translate.
Well, isn't this, the teachers union is starting to flex some muscle. It's making a comeback. Yay, yay. It's our, it's not quite Paul Hubbard, circa 2003 or something, but it is this. It's like they recognize the reading the room, and the room is more Republican, more right of center in Alabama, and they got to start kind of playing ball with a Republican legislature. But the fear is, I guess the fear is this, that, and then I've been talking about this a lot lately, the AEA is going to try to go through the sanitization process and be a more friendly, Republican-friendly type of political thing. And it may not be the case. It may just be a branding, but not be a reality.
The AEA has realized that in a Republican supermajority state, you've got to play ball with the Republicans. They've also polled their teachers and found that over 70% of the teachers that are members of AEA are actually Republican. So they've had to change their stripes a little bit just to continue functioning in Alabama. And part of that is they start giving money now to the Republican candidates instead of the Democrat candidates. I refused to take money from AEA. They offered me $7,500 in 2018 after they had opposed me and after I had won my my seat. They offered to pay me $7,500 to help me retire some of my campaign debt. I said no to it. I was one of the few people who did. But you're starting to see other people saying no now. Like, for instance, and this is very important, the education budget chairman, Danny Garrett, returned a $10,000 contribution from the AEA. They sent him a check this year. He said, I appreciate it, but no, and he sent it back to him. And I think that sends a strong psychological message that, hey, we are not going to be controlled by the AEA. We're serious about looking at school choice in the next quadrennium. And on that note, I think the AEA is going to be forced to the table. I think they're going to be forced to negotiate something on school choice, because I've spoken to the AEA reps and they tell me we can feel the momentum building for that, and we're not going to be able to stand on the train tracks and hold it back forever.
Wouldn't the fear there be that it'll be called school choice, but it might be something else, is my worry, that it's going to be some kind of token gesture to make us think that this is a new era of the AEA, and they hate critical race theory, and they're for school choice, but really it's just about getting more money in teachers' pockets or whatever, getting more benefits and making that what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to function on behalf of their constituents.
Jeff, what we need is people in the legislature who refuse to accept some watered-down, half-done, half-baked version. Same thing happened on constitutional carry. We sent a really good bill up to the Senate. They sent it back down to us. It was not even worth passing by the time the bill came back down to us. And I stood up in caucus and I railed against that version of constitutional carry for a good 5 or 10 minutes. And I said that the House needed to vote to non-concur and send it back to the Senate and make them fix it. And everybody thought I was crazy. They're like, you're about to kill a bill you've worked for 4 years by sending it back to the Senate. And I said, I didn't work for this bill for 4 years. I worked for a clean constitutional carry for 4 years. And you know the rest of the story. The Senate did clean it up, sent it back to us, and we passed it. The governor signed it within an hour. All it takes sometimes is some bold leadership from just a few people to stand up and say, no, this is wrong. No, we're not compromising with the AEA on the future of our children. You know, the AEA is there for the protection of teachers, not the protection of children. Who's there advocating for the children? That's what we need to ask ourselves. Well, hopefully, their state representative is there to advocate for the children. I certainly was for the children of my district. So I think that's the answer. I think you have to have the legislators stand up and say, no, we're not compromising on this bill. We're going to pass a clean bill or nothing at all.
Last question. We'll get you out of here on this, Representative. State Auditor's Office, now that you're likely to be the next auditor, it's still under threat of, I think there are still people that want to eliminate it, but are you really thinking about what direction you're going to take that, as much change since the campaign?
There's my biggest project this coming spring is going to be making sure I have the votes in the State House once again to kill the bill that would eliminate the state auditor. Had to kill it on the last day of session this year. They weren't super close to passing it. They were still about 17 votes short. I'd like to expand that number. And once we know we have enough votes in the State House to kill the bill, then that puts us in a stronger negotiating position to say, okay, help us rebuild the state auditor's office. I understand the frustration. The auditor is not what it used to be. Trust me, as a candidate for the position, I understand that more than anybody. How can we work to rebuild this position into something more like what Mississippi has? Their state auditor over there is a total rock star. They've got 150 employees. They have sworn investigators. They're catching people embezzling money all the time. That's what we need in Alabama. So the first step is to save the position. The second step is to work towards strengthening it. And then also just do a good job with the duties that are already assigned, like the property audit. We need to finish the project to get an RFID tag on all the state property. That's something Jim Ziegler started that was just brilliant and saved the auditor's office a lot of money and manpower. And I want to finish that project up when I take office in January.
Representative, we got to leave it there. Thank you for making time for us this morning. Great segment, and let's talk again soon.
Always. Love coming on, Jeff. Thanks so much.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.